Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how is the greater part of you doing? That inner part that wants to be recognized more, perhaps, and enjoy some solitude, perhaps, some more peace, and even a greater awareness that could come from that. So in order to help us do that, because I can also use more of that myself, I'm interviewing a man for this show who I've known for a fairly short time, over a year, and have gotten to really respect for his leadership in these areas and his vast experience and knowledge of a lifetime of working with retreats and meditations, groups, as a group leader, and more so. So I want to introduce our guest and thank him for being here, Bill Dennis. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Peter. I'm very happy to be here, and I look forward to answering questions and hopefully sharing some of my my life and some of my work and some of the practices really that have helped me to navigate the difficult times in which we live.
Well, for interest to our local listeners, the New York area, who are familiar with from the old days with the East West Bookstore, you're one of the founders of that. And that goes way back.
Thank you. I was there in the beginning, and it really was not about ownership. It was a group project, though, and I actually left my graduate program early and finished up my thesis while there, helping to get East West Books off the ground in the spring of 1978. And as I mentioned to you, Joseph Campbell and his wife Jean Ergman had the Theater of the Open Eye right above the bookstore. And then eventually, after not too long a time, they decided to kind of retire from that work. And we moved into the second floor and opened the Center for Holistic Medicine, where I worked with Rudolph Ballantyne as a psychotherapist, a biofeedback therapist, and a meditation teacher.
So that was a long time ago, and you've been on this path.
40 years.
Right. And it's wonderful. You're right now in India speaking with us on a retreat of your own with your wife. And you are going to be visiting some ashrams. And you have before, and you bring groups to them. And there's so much more that you could say better than I can about your experience and your group leadership with people seeking retreats and a meditative lifestyle.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think that this is important work. It's inner work, and it's work we can do anytime, anywhere. We can do it in the corner of a room. We can do it outside. I've done it on the subways. You know, you just decide that the next minute or the next 5 minutes or the next 30 seconds is going to be a sacred time. And you give your attention to parts of you that are normally not paid attention to. It might be your breathing. It might be muscular tension. It might be letting go of emotions or unhealthy thoughts, unhealthy emotions, tension in the body. And one of the wonderful developments, I think, in our understandings over the last 40 or 50 years is the idea that the mind and the body are not separate, that really we are one, and that we can embody and have awareness and work with ourselves as a mind-body organism, not a machine, but really a full, whole human being.
And what I feel about this is that what's really most important is the recognition of our own sacredness and being mindful that we are greater than our minds and bringing it all together in these aspects of our lives, of our bodies, of our whole life around us, in us and around us. Even you mentioned that you can do this on the subway, and to be on the subway and be in the sacredness of life, I think is beautiful. And, you know, or anywhere that we, you know, it's too easy to say, oh, you go into nature to find sacredness. Well, you know, that's nice, but it's everywhere. There are no limits. And so what I like about what you're saying is that there are no limits to where you might find sacredness in your own story, in your own personal development, in your own limitations and needs, to honor the greater self in ways that you teach.
Absolutely, absolutely. It always, there is right in front of us something that needs to be attended to, something that's important. And our consciousness, if we allow it, will tell us what that next thing is. If we take care of that and we address it, then something else presents itself, and we're in motion, and we're evolving, and we're expanding, and we're growing.
Well, let's just call that awake.
Yeah. And there's so many, I think there's actually an infinite number of ways, because we all have to have our own ways. For someone else, you know, it might be a particular person. It might be a tree. You know, I was listening today to Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning.
That's one.
And as you may know, he was a doctor inside of Auschwitz. And his job was to take care of patients in a concentration camp. And he found that people were able to transcend the abhorrent situation that they were in. And one of the examples I remember, this is just from this afternoon, was someone saying they were able to communicate with a tree. This was inside of Auschwitz. And they were able to have this connection in that way. And he too learned such deep truths that we're still benefiting from that book and from what he learned, because he used that experience to learn and to understand and to really create a whole new type of way of healing, a whole
also
new therapy.
A being, because I think what it is that when you learn to live in this higher consciousness, you're much more accepting of a greater knowing beyond our own minds. And so you don't try to control things through our own mind so much, because I think he found that the people who tried to connive and control and you know, were trying to be too smart would lose. And not that you don't need to be smart, but you need to be much more intuitively smart. In a way that flows, that is more in tune to, let's say, the greater knowing. And so that could be found in nature, or it could be found anywhere. There's a part of our, our mind that connects to a universal consciousness that knows more than our mind knows.
Yes, and it's always available. It's always there. And part of it is letting go of this. I like your language, you know, talking about a higher self. It's really just allowing that to be our experience. And yeah.
Well, I think this is really important because this show will be airing right before the new year. And a lot of people go into the new year thinking of change, of how they want to better themselves and make new year resolutions. And I think a great resolution is to become more self-aware of our greater, of the larger parts of ourselves that are beyond our ego, our immediate mind, and even our physical limitations, that we're really, that we can expand ourselves to be, let's call it safe and secure in a beautiful universe that isn't as limited as this third dimension that we constantly see around us.
Yeah, and I'm reminded as you speak too of some of the great healers that certainly Viktor Frankl being an example, but we have them running around New York City too. We have them running around, you know, in the suburbs. Those like you who've dedicated their lives to connecting and to learning and embodying a certain wholeness, these are healers, and they're available just like nature is. And I think every resource that is available to us, you know, in homeopathy, for instance, which is one of the big reasons I'm here in Mumbai, every single substance known, every single substance there is, including even disease materials and snake venoms and other poisons, are used to heal. You know, if you go into Whole Foods right now, you can find lachesis, which is made from Bushmaster snake venom. You can find arsenicum, which is arsenic. You can find lead. And these are taken therapeutically because over hundreds of years, we've learned how to transform these poisons into healing medicine.
Right, and one of the political points made by the opponents to homeopathy is that, oh my God, you're putting poisons in your body. That's terrible. We have to outlaw that.
Well, as someone who has benefited for over 40 years and at almost 68, I don't take any other medications. And I've taken hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these remedies over the years. I can say that that's definitely not true.
Right. Well, you know, you're an example of it. And also, I'm a proponent of not only homeopathy, but Bach flower remedies.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so I really, you know, believe in information, that we live in an information universe. And everything, and I've done radio shows with astrophysicists about information, that the whole universe is intelligent. And so what we're looking for is to find the intelligence. What is it about everything what's meaningful about everything, and how can we make it work for us by integrating ourselves in the meaning? You know, those homeopathic remedies, even though they're toxic on a material level, on an energetic level, they have information that our body needs.
Yes.
And so really what we're talking about is higher information. What is it that our body it doesn't have enough of? And some brilliant people have found the information that goes with these homeopathic remedies that we use.
Yes. Yes. And my wife and I give online courses on homeopathy. We give live courses in Maryland where we live. And we also give a homeopathic retreat at our retreat center. So we're very involved all over, really all over the world with our learning as well as with particularly my wife's practice. She's dedicated her life to helping people.
Well, I think what's important is that we're talking about frequencies, vibrations. And vibrations are not just noise. they're actually patterns of information. Because everything is patterns and everything is code. We only exist in a reality that our minds can comprehend from the codes.
Yes.
And sound is all interpreted in the brain, and so is vision, and we make sense of things. Otherwise, it's just all vibration. And so homeopathy is like a key to life in that it understands that all these vibrations can be worked with. And maybe we should really think of that in a larger context of, you know, it's certainly about food. All food is information, and it's what our body uses to know how to build itself and work with, and takes food apart to find what it needs in it. And different foods have different information. And so everything is food for our wellness, for our wholeness. And I think part of living a meditative life, contemplative life, not everybody meditates. And I did a show recently about contemplation, and that what we're looking for is just to be present in our sacredness. And some people can do it for a longer time through meditation. But as you say, it can just be for a very quick moment where we take that time to be mindful of our own greater self.
Yeah, it's pausing. And the pause can be for a moment. It can be for a minute. It can be for a year. It depends on what our needs are. And we have to pay attention to what's going on and what's going to support us, because unless we're healthy and whole, we really are going to have a hard time supporting or assisting or relating, let alone helping someone else.
While you're saying that, it's so interesting that I'm thinking about what it is that makes us smart. And it's about surrendering. It's really not about forcing and efforting our minds to be as smart as possible, but letting ourselves be guided by something beyond our egos, beyond our mind needing to control everything, and allowing something else to I can't say control us. I don't think that's the right word, but certainly guide us, that we free ourselves to. And maybe that's a great resolution for the new year, is to free ourselves to be guided much more through that, maybe it's called internal or external, higher, greater self and greater universe.
Yeah. And it's really again, seeing what is most important to us, and
but not efforting to it. In other words, how do I know what's most important unless my ego is measuring everything?
Well, the ego really isn't, I think, the best measure.
But it thinks it is.
It thinks it is. And this is why it's important, really, to do practices that whose goal and whose, you know, the ego does go away if you're helping others, if you're working with yourself, if you're working with your body, you're working with your breath, you're working in a relationship or part of a community. The ego has its checks and balances in these kinds of contexts. And it certainly has its place. But if we're involved with life and involved with our body and involved with others, its place is really pretty settled. It gets pretty settled pretty easily.
Yeah, that's wonderful that we can give our ego a break by calming down, by surrendering, and allowing the word, I like the word serendipity and synchronicity, to show up and bring the flow to us.
Yeah.
In notes I had from you, I had you used the word flowing awareness. And I was thinking, how do I define that? What is flowing awareness? And I think it just came out in our conversation that it's awareness that accepts the flow.
Yeah, the life is always changing. There's always a flow, there's always transition. And acknowledging that and being honest, you know, to change is not easy, but to not change is much harder.
The word change is a little bit heavy for me right now. I'd rather feel like calling it flow. I mean, you know, that's just a rhetorical nuance, but it's like, you know, sometimes change is hard for people, but if we're flowing, we don't notice it so much as we just morph.
Yeah, I like morph. I like morph, yes. Yeah.
So, and Bill, I met you through the Metro Collaborative, which is a group in New York, or a number of groups that you bring together of health professionals or healing professionals, often licensed professionals, but not always, as I'm not licensed, to bring people together to meet each other and see how we can support each other.
Yes, we have about 50 events a year now, not including our retreats in the Caribbean. But the events are in the greater New York area and greater Washington. And these are two places where, you know, I've been connected to clinicians. It was about 44 years ago that I remember saying to my meditation teacher, I want to work with drug addicts. This, I think, is my life calling. And he said, you know, you could probably help more people if you help clinicians and work with clinicians. And I started doing that almost immediately, teaching clinicians about breathing and meditation and reducing muscle tension and learning how to let go of physical issues. And so gradually over 40 years of morphing We've created these collaborative interdisciplinary kind of study groups because the same people come, as you've seen. You've come to, I think, about three of our events.
And I've met some fascinating people.
Yeah. And really, it's a very diverse group of people who are involved in helping others get well, either emotionally or mentally or physically or spiritually. We have obstetricians and we have psychiatrists, but we also have ministers and physical therapists and psychotherapists, et cetera.
But outside of that, because we're getting to the end of the show, I'd like, is there some way that people can connect with you that can, you know, find opportunities?
Well, we have a website for our retreat center, which is villaserena.com.
What is it again?
Villa Serena.
V-I-L-L-A.
Yeah, S-E-R, Serena, just as it sounds, .com. And then we have metrocollaborative.com. And I'm Bill at metrocollaborative.com. And these are two of our primary sites for our work, both in retreats and with our collaborative groups.
That's great. Bill Dennis, it's so wonderful to talk with you. What a pleasure.
Thank you, Peter. It's wonderful to see you, even though we're, 10 time zones away from each other.
Yeah.
Thank you for this opportunity.
And thanks for being on Energy Stew. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.